and welcome to Letters from the Lunchroom, a podcast by Communities and Schools of Mid-America. I'm your host, Victoria Partridge. Communities and Schools is a nationwide nonprofit which connects students and their families to local resources in order to remove barriers so that they will have greater success in school and in life. During this podcast, we talk to people who have a relationship with our organization. From students to staff members and alumni to volunteers, we know that people who connect with nonprofits have a story that led them there, and we want to know that story. Today, we are reflecting on some of our favorite moments from the episodes that you, the listeners, love the most. Some of these episodes include Site Coordinator Michael Williams, CIS Director Hania Wester, Kansas Superintendent Richard Prophet, and our very own CEO, Melissa Martin. Over the past year, many of our guests have made me laugh. Some have made me cry, and all of them have inspired me. Please stay tuned as we head into the lunchroom and reflect on the best of season one.
I had always worked at the high school from my time since I had been in education up to this point in my career. And so I just thought it was something I wanted to get into, something I wanted to look at. You know, from working in schools, you always hear the stories about teachers. Like you hear the high school teachers say, oh, I could never work with elementary school kids. And you hear the elementary school teachers like, oh, I could never work with high school kids. But I just never looked at it like that. From being a coach, I had always coached kids from high school to middle school, to elementary school, whether it was actually kids on my team or kids, whether it was a camp or a clinic that we were putting on. So I never had an issue dealing with high school kids or elementary school kids. Like I said earlier, I was a people person. I still am. And so I was just intrigued by the opportunity to be able to work at the elementary school level. I knew I hadn't been there. I thought it was experience that I could kind of get. And honestly, that was the best decision because those were some of the best 2 years of my life working at Ross Elementary for the 2 years that I did.
That. So what would you say are the main differences between working with elementary school kids and working with high school kids?
I mean, I think the very first one that jumps out is the amount of hugs that you get in the daytime. Even though my hug count probably is going up at Highland Park just because I'm getting to know kids more. But you can never count the amount of hugs that you get with the young kids. And I think it's more so to people that they are, you know, able to connect with and create a relationship with. But I think like just the contact, you get genuine. I think over time with high school kids, you grow and gain genuine contact with them and genuine relationships and communication after they fully believe that they can trust you and you begin to show them that you'll continuously be there for them. A lot of time for young kids, you get that right away, especially if you're showing that stuff right away. They buy into you right away. They're seeking that relationship. So I think the amount of hugs that I get, that was one just being funny.
Okay, so you have obviously made a huge impact in Tulsa yourself with your work in the schools, with your work with communities and schools. And then you recently took on another role, and that is with the Tulsa School Board, correct?
Correct. And that was as recent as September 17th.
So tell me more about that. I want to know what kind of sparked your interest in taking on that additional role and what the process was like, the good, the bad, the ugly, all of it.
So those that know me extremely well, I like to work behind the scenes. And I don't like the spotlight much. That's why it's great in a way that I'm having the honor of the podcast, but in my head, I'm like, there's so many other people that are better than me.
Your story is important too.
Thanks. And anyway, my husband and I, and actually my family and I, had worked hard on the helping with the campaign of the person that was on the school board representing District 2, which is the district or the area I live in, and worked hard on making sure that there was someone fresh, new, that had some education experience and that lived in our neighborhood so that our neighborhood could be represented. So we worked on that, helped her through that, and she was able to get in. And she's a great equity advocate. She knew exactly what to say and used her privilege to make sure that doors were opened. And she did an incredible job, I believe. And she had a young daughter and decided to stay at home while she was on the board. And when her second child came, she knew that she was not going to be able to devote as much time to the board and wanted to go ahead and step down, but at the same time, encourage someone that could keep on with the issues that she had been dealing with during her time on the board. So she approached me and she approached several others. And that was a hard one for me because, again, I don't like to be on the spotlight. And I also knew that there could be potential conflicts. So I wanted, before I even consider it, I told my husband, we need to find out whether this would even be a possibility because of the job that I have. And according to the Oklahoma law, and after consulting a couple of attorneys, they made it very clear that there was no conflict of interest. So then from there, I spoke to Melissa and spoke to Brandy, my immediate supervisor, and talked to them about it. And when I approached people, I was trying to get someone to say, oh, yes, you shouldn't do this. However, I kept hearing people be in support, like, oh, why can't people be against this? And then there are two instances that really made it clear that I needed to put myself aside. And one of them was speaking to my own children. We sat around a dining room table and we were extremely honest with what that would look like if I even applied and what it would look like if I got the position. And they didn't take any real time to think. They just said, Mom, you shouldn't have to question this. We moved into this neighborhood to be among the vulnerable and to be able to help those that have no voice. So you shouldn't, I mean, there's no question about this. We will handle whatever needs to be handled on the family side, but we support you 100%. Now, of course, I'm paraphrasing because there's there are three of them. And then I met with some mothers that were happened to be around the office for some meeting that they had and ran into them and talked to them about this opportunity. And it's like I could see their faces and the eyes just changed. As soon as they heard this opportunity, I could see hope come into their through their eyes, and the fact that they said that they would support me 100%, that this would be their way in to be able to be heard, that was the catalyst. I just said, okay, I'm ready to put my feelings aside and step up and do what needs to be done for whatever length of time that is. And so this was going to be an appointment, not an election, which meant I needed to apply. And then I was going to be given 5 minutes to speak at the board meeting. And there were five people that spoke. All of us spoke that night. It was a very long board meeting. And what was critical was not the fact that I got a chance to speak and do so in both languages, but it's the fact that we were able to rally the group of people that represented the voiceless up to this time. And they came
in masses to the board meeting. So the first board meeting, the one where I spoke at, we had 121 people come to support
me. Oh my
gosh. Most of them had never, most of them had never been in a board meeting, didn't even know what a board meeting was. And it was the first time I'm going to say that there were so many people that looked like me at the board meeting. It was amazing. It was impressive. And they were all ages. And there were little kids. There were kids from high school. There were kids that were in college and their parents and of all ages too and all backgrounds. And that helped me also get my fears of being speaking in front of people because I could see at their faces and I feel so comfortable when I'm around them that it put me at ease. However, that evening, the board came back with the decision that they wanted to pursue interviews of the candidates. And so they were going to interview us separately the following week, which was the week that we were supposed to be at town hall conference, but then it got canceled. And I was thankfully, because of that cancellation, I was able to have face-to-face interview. And then we came back to the next board meeting, and about 100 folks showed up again, and which was great. And I remember the feeling of, this is great support. I'm hoping that they don't get disappointed. And it's funny because that people don't know how things work, including myself, because a lot of them kept coming to me and saying, okay, Hania, where do we sign up for the vote? And I would have to say, well, unfortunately, we don't sign up anywhere and you don't vote. You're voting with your presence. And this is not an election. They have to make up their own minds and decide what they want to do. And so they said, okay, we'll just stay. And we thought at some point they would go into executive session to kind of decide what the next step would be. And we even had a great partner, a great friend that was ready to entertain the masses while the board was in executive session so that the masses would stay.
Wait, how were they going to entertain them?
Oh, song and dance.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
Amazing. Okay, continue.
And he's great. And he's great. And he's actually one of our local advisory council members.
Fantastic.
And anyway, so unfortunately, they didn't go into executive session. And unfortunately, I didn't know that you didn't need to have all yeses for the motion to be passed. I was listening to everybody, every board member, decide whether it was a yes or no. And the first person said no. And so as soon as I heard the no, I thought, okay, so that's it. I'm just going to start working on some stuff that I need to do for work tomorrow, and started writing. And I recall I had my exchange student to my right. I had my youngest daughter to my left. And then my son, husband, and my other daughter, they were around somewhere in the area. But, and then I overheard the rest of the board members say yes. There was one that abstained, and but I had blocked everything else off. So apparently there was a congratulations, Hania Wester, and people started clapping, but I didn't know what the clap was for, to the point that my exchange student turned to me and said, Hania, te eligieron, they picked you. And I'm like, what? And then my daughter turned to me and said the same thing. And then I see the front row in front of me, which was filled with former employees, my teachers. And oh my gosh, I'm getting emotional now. I see my former teachers stand up and turn around and give me a standing ovation.
Oh my gosh.
And that's the point that I thought, oh, this is for real. All this work has paid off, and they have actually decided to open the door to equity and to folks. I have never had a voice in this board, and it worked. And so I grabbed my stuff. I didn't know what to grab. I grabbed whatever I could, and I was asked to go to the front, and then I did my swearing in, and I was asked to sit at the table and was given an agenda, and everything else just happened. And it was actually, this is the first time I've gotten so emotional about it. It was
and
actually
I'm right there
the
with you,
time.
Giuseppe. Okay. I'm just over here like wiping tears, trying not to cry into the mic. Oh my gosh, I'm so proud of you.
It was great. Oh, thank you. Thank you. And I gotta say, I'm so proud of the people that believed in that this could happen, and people that removed the barriers and decided to show up regardless of what they would think that could happen to them being in public. And I'm proud of the board for really choosing equity over perception. And it's been great. It's been a lot of work, extra work. And now, because when you're appointed, you have to go through, you're appointed until the next election, and then to be able to finish whatever term's left of that position. And so I'm going through the campaigning right now for a February election to see if I get to stay for the remainder of the 2 years of the term.
Oh my goodness. That's really amazing to hear, because I do talk to some superintendents in one of my roles that I play here with Communities and Schools outside of the, you know, podcast. I'm also an area director. And so it's always great to hear that kind of feedback and to hear that we are truly making a difference in the lives of their students and within their community. But then I also love the piece about being part of that school family, because I think that's really important.
Right.
So while you're on that thought, what are some of your greatest accomplishments regarding the Communities and Schools programs?
Well, one of the things that I want everybody to really know is that Communities and Schools is set up that if you have the right person in a director's place, that as an administrator, what I need to do is remove obstacles and try to get them the resources that they need to do their job. Otherwise, they just take care of it. And we had the right people in place in Chanute. We had some wonderful ladies who worked in our elementary school that they were some of the first faces that you saw when you came into the building on a parent night. They were some of the first people that you saw at some of the community events when you were helping out. They were somebody that the teachers could rely on to go to for resources. They worked hand in hand with the administrators, the counselors to take care of everything. And it was just a wonderful relationship. But to get that job done, there were certain things that I had to remove from out of their way so that they could do their job, make sure that we opened doors where they seemed to be shut, try to secure resources that we keep the program going. And so my role wasn't as active as what maybe I would like for it to have been. But once again, we had the people in place that could do the job. I just needed to support it, do my job as a superintendent, and make sure that they were able to do their job.
So we've talked about your favorite part of working with CIS of Mid-America. What would you say is one of the challenges of working in this organization?
I think one of the challenges is that the need is so great. And so consequently, we're extremely focused on how best to help meet need. And so we have an amazing model, and we have compelling need. And how do we get services to as many of these kids and families as possible? and how do we meet them at their point of greatest need? And how do we best serve those populations who have extreme need? And by that, I'm thinking in particular, you know, when you look at educational and life outcome data, at human service data, you know, there are particular populations, even within our overall at-risk population, that have significant needs, such as migrant students or students who are involved in the foster or juvenile justice systems. And so how can we best serve these kids that are facing extraordinarily difficult circumstances? Mm-hmm. I'd say for me, the most effective way to meet the needs of those that we feel called to serve is the greatest challenge.
But, you know, I think that that actually says a lot about you and what brought you to this organization, is because that is something that is very front and center within your heart and your focus, and probably even your values that you would, that you bring to work every day.
Thanks. I totally agree. It is, you know, funding, good grief. Anybody in the nonprofit arena knows that funding is a perennial challenge.
Right.
But it's always going to be with us. And at the end of the day, all the funding in the world is not effective if the services aren't as effective as they can be. And that's why ultimately it's the quest for the most effective services possible is always first with me.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that what you were just talking about is one of the key things that makes you and so many of our site coordinators really successful at their job, is understanding that every single student comes to you with a unique experience and a unique set of problems and potential barriers that it's up to you to kind of work with and earn that trust in order to then help remove those barriers.
Yes, ma'am.
So in that same kind of mind thought, what are some of your favorite supports that you've provided throughout your time with CIS to students and or their families?
Oh, yeah. That takes me back. You know, I think about things that we did at the elementary school level. I'm so big on with me being a coach, I'm so big on like teaching and life lessons. And so when I was at Ross, we would do boys groups. We had a few boys groups going on. I always liked, you know, the smaller group setting, being able to get kids kind of out of the big group and out and into their comfort zone a little bit. And I think it's more intimate in those settings. It's a little bit more direct in those settings as well, too. And we're able to kind of dig a little bit deeper, you know, on the kids. And then also at times, if there's, you know, specific circumstances or things going on.
We are going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with a second serving of Letters from the Lunchroom. So stay tuned. Welcome back. As mentioned earlier, all of our guests are asked to write a letter to the students that we serve. The only guideline that they were given is that it is to come from the heart.
You are one of those people. You're talented where others lack talent. You're strong where others are weak. You have a specific purpose that the rest of us need. The rest of us need your help. I want you to help the world be the best that it can be, and it can't be that without you. Each one of you is a gift. Don't dare forget about that. You make the world a better place to be. Surround your place with other people who believe in you. I believe in you. You make a difference for everyone, and you are loved.
Dear amazing, valuable, gifted, beautiful CIS students. The first thing I want to say is yay you. Just being a CIS student says that you and others around you know you matter, and that you have a lot to offer, and that you're taking steps to make sure your life can be everything you want it to be, even things you can't imagine right now. I feel like I could talk to you for hours, telling you stories about how so many of us have experienced life and hope and despair and joy and abuse and beauty and survival and finally flourishing because and in spite of all of it. You would understand because you have your stories too. Sometimes our stories help us understand the world and ourselves. Sometimes our stories mislead us into believing the world has forgotten us or doesn't care. But I promise you that you are most definitely not forgotten. You are very definitely thought of and cared about and loved. With a few minutes to give you some life advice, here's what I've got. Understand that the very same life can be both awful and beautiful. The trick is not to expect only awfulness or only beauty. There's a lot of ordinary too, and that's good because you can rest up during the ordinary times. Both the awful and the beautiful times can take a lot of energy. If you work toward making the majority of your life be ordinary and beautiful, you'll have a good life. Sometimes we have no control over the things that make life awful or beautiful. And sometimes our choices are what make the difference between awful and ordinary or beautiful. Speaking of choices, when you don't know what to do, choose love. Choose to be kind. Choose the thing that seems to be the closest to love and kindness and goodness and light. That doesn't mean you don't use your voice or that you give up your dignity or your power. It means you use your voice and your strength from a place of love and light. Choices that come from our small, mean places just keep cycles of negativity and hate going, and we are way better than that. Also, read. Reading has taught me a lot about how to live life. I hope you are or will become readers too. If reading isn't your jam, then I hope you'll be a listener. There are a lot of important things that a lot of people have to share with us. When things are tough, remember what Mr. Rogers said. Look for the helpers. There really are helpers everywhere. Look for them and be brave enough to say, I need you. If you think someone's a helper but they don't help you, don't give up on the helpers. Just find the next one. Find some things you're interested in and do them. If you're a little one and you like to color, then color. Do you like to run? Then run. Have you wondered what it would be like to grow a plant? Try it. Trying out things helps you learn about yourself and your talents. Practicing them makes you better at them. Find someone who knows about what you're interested in. Maybe they're at school or in your neighborhood or at the library or on the internet. You can't even imagine some of the crazy good things that can come from figuring out what you're interested in and good at. Be grateful for something every day. Find something you can be thankful for, even if the only thing you can find that day is that the sky is pretty, or you have a friend, or that tomorrow will be a new day. If you're feeling down right now, I want you to know and remember that it gets better. If things are going great, I want you to know and remember that it can get even better. We need you, CIS kids. You have a place in this world, an important place. We need your perspective, your heart, your vision for a just and better world. I am so excited about our future when I think of you in it, thriving, being your best self, living a life of possibility and excitement and fullness. It takes my breath away to think of who you can be. Believe in yourself. Dream big. Dream bigger. Find the helpers. Believe in life. Believe that you can help change the world. Because you can.
Okay, Mike, are you ready for some extra credit questions?
Oh, yeah. You can't turn down free points now when you say extra credit.
Okay, you've got three questions. The first one is, what is your favorite part about being a CIS site coordinator?
Oh man, the flexibility. You know, we're given as site coordinators, you know, the ability to come into a school and diagnose needs, and then from there, connect with the right resources, the right people, the right programs to meet those needs. And so, what it's allowed me to do is it's just allowed me to use my personal creativity to stay in line with things that I believe in, things that I'm passionate about, and then implement that into the model for the school that I'm working at. So, you know, I love the opportunity to be creative and the flexibility that the job gives us to be ourselves.
So, Melissa, what would you say is your definition of success?
My definition of success really centers around fullness. And so to me, any endeavor, no matter who we are, if we have functioned within that endeavor, if we have embraced within that endeavor, if we have impacted as a result of that endeavor with fullness, meaning to the best of our ability, with every resource possible, with the best possible outcomes for whatever it is that we're trying to do, if we have given it our fullest, then to me, that is success. So, you know, there are, of course, any number of inequities in our world, any number of resources, all kinds of differing access to resources. And I don't measure success necessarily in what was attained. I measure success in what was given, what was tried, what was fought for. That to me is success.
I love that. And I think that the students who hear that, because I'm hoping that students will listen to this podcast, as well as teachers and parents and staff members that work with us or people that work in similar organizations, you know, social workers, will hear that and take that to heart. Because I feel like it's something that really anybody can benefit from making part of their own definition of success, that it's not just, you know, making $1 million a year or having, you know, this many cars, that it's something that's outside of that box definition. So, yeah. So thank you for sharing that. I wanted to kind of wrap this up with one more question. What is one piece of advice that you would give to somebody who is interested in starting a career with a nonprofit organization?
That's interesting. Well, I would say, first of all, really learn as much as you can about the nonprofit sector, or what I like to think of as the for impact sector, because there are a lot of different kinds of nonprofits out there. So what is it that resonates for you? You know, is it animal welfare? Is it access to higher education? Is it basic needs like food and housing? Figure out what it is that really appeals to you, and then learn about the nonprofit sector as a whole. Think about your talents. What are your skill sets? If you're a good writer, you know, certainly breaking into this arena as a grant writer was an incredible opportunity, you know, in my life. But really find out what it is that's going to drive you, and then start following the organizations in your area for openings, and then start pursuing them. And I would also say, you know, don't wait for the job opening. Call the organization and say, I'm considering a nonprofit career in this field, and I'm wondering if anyone there would give me an hour of their time to talk to me. I think most of the time, because, you know, in the nonprofit arena, a lot of us are helpers anyway, I think you will find people that would be happy to talk to you about the sector and their particular place in it. I know that I get these calls fairly regularly, and I never, never say no. That in itself is a great opportunity. So that would be my advice on how to start.
All right. I hope you guys are listening, because that is some excellent advice. And so your final extra credit question is, if you had one superpower, what would it be and why?
So I thought of one, and then I thought, that's probably not a superpower. Because I thought, oh, if I could just snap my fingers and whatever support someone needed, I could provide, connect them with whatever. But then I thought, well, what if I could just snap my fingers and world peace would happen? But that's not a superpower.
That would be lovely.
So I think the second one I thought of and landed on was being able, and I forget how you call that, but being able to transport yourself from one place to another.
Like teleportation?
Yes. I don't like flying because I'm afraid of heights. And I don't like going fast, but I could teleport myself from one place to another and teleport someone with me. So if a neighbor says, I need groceries, we can just together go to the grocery store without having to use a car. And then it also, it's great for the environment.
Mm-hmm. Very true. I love that.
And if I could tell, if I could do that for somebody else, where somebody says, my school called and I'm at work and I can't get off work, or I can't go because it's going to be an hour on a bus to get there, I would just be able to transport them to the school. They can mm-hmm. take care of whatever issues.
Well, and you mentioned that you work with a lot of immigrants, and yes. you know it's so expensive to travel. And so you could absolutely. Very easily help people go see, you know, loved
their families.
Ones. Yeah, back in their home countries. Like, that would be so cool.
Absolutely. Why not?
Yeah.
And then I could transport myself back and forth to Puerto Rico.
Absolutely. I see endless, you know, opportunities for that just to be a really good thing.
Yeah.
Very cool. Thank you so much for joining us for the season one finale episode of Letters from the Lunchroom. We'll be back on July 12th for the start of season two. For more information on Communities and Schools of Mid-America, please check out our website at cismidamerica.org. Make sure to subscribe to this podcast and follow us on social media at cismidamerica. And if you haven't yet, please leave us a review of this podcast. I hope you've enjoyed this episode of Letters from the Lunchroom. I'm your host, Victoria Partridge, and until next time, class is dismissed.